Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades. Now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Killer Bees!
Live from East River 9 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brett.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George, assistant to the regional manager behind the glass. Killer Bees, some of us broadcasting live at the River House in East River 9, the new par 3 course in Houston. Beautiful spot to hang out. Maybe not so much today, but inside the River House is the perfect spot to hang out. Enjoy a bite, enjoy a drink, and enjoy the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. What's the scene like there, Blinkers?
It is always beautiful. Honestly, the view of the skyline is just amazing here. And I think the other thing that people don't realize is there's a full driving range and there's pickleball. And you know fat people's tennis is sweeping the nation. Pickleball is the sport everybody needs to get involved with. So they've got it all covered for you. They've got a beautiful restaurant for both lunch and dinner with great food. They've got TVs galore to watch all the Masters coverage. It's a really, really cool spot. And because it's so close to downtown, it's like a little hidden gem that I think a lot of business people are going to figure out. They can go hit balls and hit a bucket at lunch and get some quick food right here that's really delicious and then get back to work.
Yeah, River House open for lunch and dinner, neighborhood restaurant, patio bar positioned along the Buffalo Bayou that overlooks the Houston downtown skyline that you're talking about. You can enjoy some live music in the evening, the expansive outdoor terrace, kids' playscape as well, and then outdoor games.
Matter of fact, Sales Guy Q has been out on the playscape for like an hour and a half today.
I hope he's having fun. I like for people to have fun. Drink and food specials all throughout Masters weekend, which is underway now. We'll talk about Tiger. Tiger's on the golf course now, smelling the azaleas. The heavens are looking down at the beautiful piece of property known as Augusta National. Also,
can
a hole-in-one challenge
if you have,
all weekend
Jeremy,
long
you're a
at
golf
the
guy?
East River 9, which you can receive a Sunday golf bag and a 30-day membership if you hit a hole-in-one during Masters weekend. So you got to give that a shot. What's up, Blankers?
If you're not a golf guy, I mean, you're a golf guy, but even if you're not a golf guy, you have to put that on your bucket list. You have to make one trip and figure out a way to go to the Masters. It's the most, whether you're a golfer or not, it's the one of the most incredible pieces of property I've ever seen. And TV does not do it justice in terms of all the different elevation changes and undulations and all the things that go with it. It's amazing. And really, literally, it is a hidden gem. You come in on a street where, and I heard John talking about it this morning, you come in on Washington Avenue, and it's nothing but Hooters and Waffle House and like a Citgo gas station. And all of a sudden you look to your right and you go, is that a driving range net? And then boom, Magnolia Lane's right there. And you're like, oh my God. And it's pretty incredible.
A lot of red numbers early today as well. Victor Hovland, 5 under, getting off to a hot start. A lot of red numbers. This is the time of day that you wanted to be playing today at Augusta. The early wave is supposed to play easier than the afternoon wave, and right now a bunch of golfers are taking advantage of that. We'll talk about the match, give you some updates sprinkled throughout the show as well. Yesterday, Blankers, the Astros break that little skid a little bit, and you always feel a little bit better after a victory, especially a getaway day. You went on getaway day. It always feels good. That flight always feels a little bit better. That chartered meal onside the team plane tastes a little bit better. But the Astros beat the Tigers 8-2, salvage a game in the 3-game series, don't get swept by what we expect to be the lowly Tigers. My biggest takeaway from this, Blankers, was actually Christian Javier. I was watching the game a little bit throughout the show yesterday, noticing the velo, things like that. And if you fell for the 310 bits, then the joke is on you. But Christian Javier's velocity was a little bit down yesterday, especially later in the game. It looked to be, I think he was a little bit tired late in that game.
Yeah,
I think he was. And, you know, it's only his second start. Dusty's trying to save the pin a little bit. And today's off day will be good for the Houston Astros in that regard. But Javier, who didn't have his best swing and miss stuff, five strikeouts, six innings, certainly nothing to, like, you know, scoff at. But we know he's capable of more than that. I looked at Javier's start, though, as I didn't think he had his best stuff. His velocity wasn't as high as it normally is. I think he fatigued, you know, the fifth, sixth inning of that game. Yet he holds a Major League Baseball team to one run over six innings. That's the kind of stuff you need from Christian Javier over 32 starts in the 2023 season. He's not going to be his best every night. Yesterday, I didn't think he was close to his best. He gives up one run in six innings. Love to see that from Christian Javier.
Well, and here's what I would add to that, Jeremy, is the fact that the two horses at the top of your rotation that I was talking with you about this very subject the other day, and this was before Javier made his second start, these guys are doing exactly what you need them to do, because they're going to go, and whether you've been slumping or your offense just hasn't been hitting and all the criticism that we know that the team has taken in the way they've started the season, these are the two guys that become slump busters. These are the guys that when you know it's their turn in the rotation, you can take a deep breath and know they're going to do their part. It's just you've got to score some runs. You might have to do a few things here and there, you know, to give them some help. But overall, even without Justin Verlander, you know that you have confidence when these two guys take the bump. More times than not, they're going to give you a quality start. They're going to give you everything they got. Because I think a lot of what happened yesterday with Javier, specifically later in the game too, we saw, aside from Alcantara with Miami the other day, who threw a complete game, which was just freak of nature-ish, most of these starting pitchers aren't stretched out enough to give you deep into the game type stuff. And if they're trying to do that, they're probably not going to be as effective. But the fact that he was able, I mean, he threw, I think, maybe too many pitches. I don't like the fact that he threw as many pitches as he did and went as deep as he did, but he did. And like you said, he was still basically untouchable. He was a guy that was had command of his stuff. He did everything you needed him to do. So I just think that Astros fans, for all the, you know, pointing the fingers at the negativity, you can feel really good about the two guys at the top of your rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we kind of, you know, we, you and I, I think most of the Hive expected this from Fromber and Javier over the – look. They've only made two starts, but over the course of the season that you have a really good 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation. You lost last year's Cy Young. Justin Verlander is no longer around. So, like, I think more probably from a national perspective than a local perspective, it's what do these two guys look like anchoring a rotation? Because Fromber was part of anchoring that rotation last year alongside Justin Verlander. But Javier, like, was more of the middle of the rotation pitcher. He started the year in the bullpen, worked out of the bullpen like two or three times, and then was a regular in the starting rotation, but wasn't a dude that you necessarily counted on at the top. Like, he was going five innings, things like that. He wasn't going deep into games. In fact, he didn't have enough innings to qualify for a lot of the pitching stats last year. So Fromber is making that step up from being, you know, a number two, the Robin to Verlander's Batman, to now being the ace of a rotation. And I think that so far, so good. Two starts, small sample. And then Javier is taking that step up, adding to his role, where instead of being a middle of the rotation, back of the rotation starting pitcher, you're now looking at him to be the second part of what you hope is one of the best starting duos in all of baseball.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think the experience of last year helped both pitchers. We know that what Fromber did probably won't be, you know, matched again and duplicated this year, but that's okay because you know what you have in him, and you look at him right now and say this early in the season to still see him doing the things with the command that he has, it makes you feel good, especially with, you know, taking the switch out, being a ground ball pitcher. And then you look at what Javier is doing now, knowing that it's on him. You know, they took care of him. They love him. They want him to be a part of this. And instead of the uncertainty of, am I going to be in the pen? Am I going to be starting? What's my true role here? Now it's all spelled out for him, and he settled right in and said, let's do this. I'll do whatever I need to do. I know my stuff. And that's what he did yesterday. He knew his stuff, and he knew how to use it. And, yeah, he gave up the run early. But overall, I mean, you can't complain about anything that he's done or continues to do for this team.
Yeah, kind of gutted through what I thought didn't necessarily have his sharpest stuff. The velo was a little bit down, But you're going to have days like that. And he gives you 99 pitches. He gives you six innings. And he holds a Major League Baseball team to one run. Tiger team that we don't expect to hit a whole lot, but a Tiger team that won the first two games of the series, and you're trying to avoid a sweep. Another, like, you know, feather in the cap for Christian Javier is that he was able to be that, you know, dude in the rotation that ends a slump. Like, there's a lot of times whenever you look at a starting pitcher and you're like, okay, you got to be our guy that changes the momentum. You got to be the guy that goes out there and snaps a three-game losing streak, snaps a four-game losing streak when you're in a funk. And then that dude turns in a performance that allows you to win, and Javier did that. Bullpen was fine. Brian Abreu got into a little bit of command issues there in the seventh inning, walked back-to-back hitters. But Brian Abreu, being the dude that can escape jams all of a sudden, was able to get out of it. Got a strikeout, able to escape the inning unscathed. Montero, a little shaky again. Struck out two, though, and then Ryan Pressly. What do you want to talk about first, the Pressly or the Montero? Because I think that there's some good with Pressly, and then Montero is more like, okay, watching him a little bit closer. I'm not going to go as far to say bad, but watching him slightly closer.
No, but I said to you, the contract is going to be the main reason why everybody's probably got an extra eye on him. I just felt like what we've seen in his career, he had just one of those epiphany years last year, and good on him, you know, and he cashed in for it. But I think that this year people have too high expectations for this guy, and that's why I'm watching him, because I don't expect the same thing that he did a year ago, and I expect him to come back more to the norm, and I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, the same thing when we talk about, and we'll get to Abreu, it's never going to be about his stuff. It's going to be about his command, and more so than anything else, what's between his ears. But from a Montero perspective, we know he's got a plus-plus fastball, but it's just about making sure he locates everything else, and that's when he's effective. And if he's not, people are timing that fastball, and they know how hard he throws, and he gets himself into some trouble. The hitters put good contact on him. So, yeah, I mean, the bullpen's not – we said this. The bullpen's not going to equal what it did last year. I mean, those numbers were, you know, outrageously good. But you would expect that the arms were good enough that they were still going to be one of the best bullpens in baseball. They're settling in, too. And it's going to take a little while probably for them, too, to find their midseason form. So, you know, you're going to take some lumps along the way. And they've been, as we talked about, taxed a lot with the amount of innings they've had to pick up for the starters not going as deep. So the pitching staff has probably, had the biggest wear and tear issues at the start of the season.
What's the norm for Montero? Like, what is that baseline for you? Because you say he's going to go back to the norm. He's going to regress to the norm. So I'm curious.
Well,
like,
I mean, I hope he doesn't regress too far. I mean, you look at it, and he's never been, you know, even back to the Mets where they were, is he a starter, is he a relief pitcher? Look, I think that he's got good stuff, you know, when he's on. And obviously he's got the plus-plus fastball. I don't know if he stays in the eighth inning the whole season. I hope so. But I
What's
think
the
that
ERA
a lot,
though look like? Like what? Like whenever you talk about, because I'm trying to get you to define what a norm for Montero is.
What was his ERA last year?
You need to work on a baseline of like what his norm is. 2.37.
See, I hope I'm wrong, but I think that creeps more up around, you know, 2.75, 3.
I would take that. I would take a 2.75.
Yeah,
ERA
I'd take
from
that, but I'm just saying, and I'm trying to go, you know, a little bit lighter until we see more. But just when you look at overall body of work for him for his career, I think last year was just one of those he found it moments, and I don't know if he can maintain it.
I mean, his career ERA is 4.64. So, I mean, that it goes back to the is there a reason, is there an excuse? I think Montero is good. I think the numbers support your claim. Mine's more eye test. Like, it's the four-pitch mix. It's the stuff. It's like him kind of figuring it out. At this course of his career. And like, I think you can have two different conversations between contract and then like production, because is he going to live up to, you know, $17 million a year relief pitcher? That's tough to do for a guy who's not a closer. Do I think Montero is going to be a solid setup guy? Yeah, I do. Let's get to the Pressly Abreu side that you wanted to talk about. 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from East River 9 inside the River House. Come join us for a bite, a drink, and watching the Masters, the first major of the year. Killer Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live, East River 9. Come find us inside the River House there, 7A to 7P. Great drink specials. The food is fantastic. Open for lunch, open for dinner. The Masters are going on right now. Featured groups, the ESPN coverage will get underway a little bit later this afternoon. Lots of red numbers in the morning tea times at Augusta National during Masters weekend at East River 9. Drink and food specials, hole-in-one challenge all as well, all weekend long. If you make a hole-in-one, you receive a Sunday golf bag and a 30-day membership if you make an ace. Find it 65 Hirsch Road, 77020. You can find out more information at eastriver9.com. I hear you making noises in the background there, Blankers.
Well, because we just had the par 3 hole-in-one conversation, and they're treating it like a hole-in-one count.
It's a par 3 course. I'd imagine they would.
Yeah. I mean, again, and this is a course. It's a beautiful course. It's a great layout. I just think this is the kind of – the holes are short now here to where I understand your point that is it – I don't think it would count.
Okay. All right. One of the cool features about the Houston's new public 9-hole par 3 golf course, too, East River 9, LED lights for evening play. So you get off work. You get off work a little bit early. You can take advantage of the range, like you were mentioning. You can take advantage of the LED lights, get in a few holes, or play all 9 if you play fast, and then you can have a good bite and enjoy some live entertainment there as well inside the River House. What were the points you wanted to make on Ryan Pressly and Brian Abreu?
No, I didn't even Pressly didn't really come up yet. I just think that Pressly's a guy because of the World Baseball Classic. He got extra work that I don't think any of the other pitchers were going to get, and he got into some more high-leverage type situations. And there's a guy that I don't think you're going to be in a hurry to rush or screw around with because he's so vital to your long-term success this season and beyond. But, I think he's going to be fine. I know that everybody is deeply concerned about the arm shake, but he already has come back once and looked a lot better. So we'll see what happens, but it's not like last year.
Yesterday. If you include yesterday, it's been twice. It's been twice now since.
Yeah, twice, right. That's right. Yep. You're right. So twice you've seen him now, and I don't think there's anything to worry about. You can put those fears to rest. With Abreu, look, I would think that he's going to be fine too, and that's a different scenario than I would have said a year ago when I was constantly saying, look, this guy's fine till he puts runners on base. Then something flips mentally, and he doesn't seem to have the same command and the same confidence. I'm not even going to go that far this year because I saw him do what he did in the playoffs, and I believe that he can do this. But again, it's early in the season. Everybody is still stretching it out and finding their way and figuring out command of their pitches. It's going to happen. Is it more concerning if it happens in September or late August and into September before you get ready for the playoffs? Sure. But right now, this is the growing pains in a 162-game schedule that all teams and all players go through. And as relief pitchers who have been used a little bit more frequently than maybe you thought they were going to be used, and they're not completely where they're going to be midseason, you're going to have to take the lump sometimes.
I don't think he's been pitching bad. Like I'm kind of confused by the narrative that he's had. Like he's given up one run. He gave up the long ball yesterday. He pitched himself into trouble. You don't like to see that command, but he did that. Like he got out of it. Like you mentioned last year, mostly early in the year, that he had trouble in those situations. And yesterday, a couple of walks, like, are we going to see that dude? Are we going to see Jose Abreu, the guy that we were fearful of early last year? Strikeout, double play, out of the inning.
Yeah, Brian Abreu, look, again, there's the reason why you saw or you hear or you know of people that have some level of concern is because this is what people have seen, and this is what I highlighted in the past that I was concerned with Brian Abreu, that you know, he sometimes just kind of falls out of that zone where he's not locked in and he loses control or lets a couple guys here or there get on base, walks in them, whatever. And then it just doesn't seem like he has the same stuff that he has when he's in full command and he's, you know, confident and most times runners aren't on base. But I'm not deeply, like I said, unlike a year ago, he's shown me what he can do. He's shown me that the moments aren't going to be too big for him. So I'm not concerned. Long balls happen because of what I said, because these guys aren't completely where they want to be for a full major league season yet. But we know how dominant his stuff is. And we know that he could just basically rely on fastball and a changeup, and he can get guys out. But he's got more than that. So I understand where some of the concern is because people have seen this before, but they also have to be reminded. They also saw a guy that was lights out in the playoffs that seemingly found it. So he'll find it again. He's going to be just fine.
Yeah, maybe my view is different, but I think Abreu's been really good. I think he has been dominant. Six strikeouts in four innings so far. Another player that's been dominant for the Houston Astros, the right fielder, the left-handed swinging Kyle Tucker. If you weren't aware yesterday, this is what he did in yesterday's game. He hit a home run. He hit a home run in yesterday's game against the Detroit Tigers. He had a homer, a double, knocked in a couple of runs, had a run scored in that game as well. Of course he did, because he hit a home run. But Kyle Tucker, who's kind of notorious for slow starts, Blankers, not a slow start this season. He's knocking the cover off the baseball. And I love what the middle of the order is doing. 3-5 in this lineup. But Kyle Tucker, like, he's used to not having the starts that we're accustomed to. He had that. He's had that so far through seven games, and I mean, I don't think he can like keep up the pace that he's currently on. But if you get the Kyle Tucker we've seen, you combine it with this start that he's had, maybe those MVP conversations that Joe George was bringing up during the during spring training might come to fruition.
Kudos to Jake and to Cody for putting money down on him on the MVP. I think it was like plus 2,500 or whatever. But that's a great call. But just like on the flip side, when we talk about Ryan Pressly and maybe the WBC kind of put him in a situation where now he maybe, you know, did too much too early, I think it really helped Kyle Tucker, because I think a lot of guys come into spring training and they're relaxed and they're not in any hurry. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they've been kind of nursed along so slowly that, boom, here comes the regular season. Some guys take to that well, a la the fact that Yordan had barely a spring training game or two, and look where he is. But look at Kyle Tucker, thanks to the WBC and kind of ramping it up a little bit. He looks fantastic. We know his contract's coming up, you know, and he knows that he's got to continue to show out. He is. And thankfully he is, because the middle of the order has been saving their bacon offensively, along with some timely hits down at the bottom where you don't expect it. But just the production of Abreu, Yordan, and Tucker have been a huge plus for this team, and they've been a savior in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I feel like some people get the idea. Look, Tucker's contract is like right around the corner. Like the club control is kind of right around the corner. I get the sense, though, from some people that because the Kyle Tucker Astros negotiations have really been a topic of conversations early last year. I remember McTaggart's reports that the Astros and Tucker have been in talks about a contract extension. Nothing came to fruition. Then they signed Yordan Alvarez. Dana Brown said that he wanted to try to get him locked up.
Sorry, I think that was the key. I think that was the key. When Yordan signed, then it got really ramped up. Then everybody was hyper-focused on Tucker.
Yeah, see, the reports came out before Yordan. They came out like a month before the Yordan deal, and then suddenly we never heard anything about a Yordan extension talk, and then boom, Yordan Alvarez signed the deal. And then when Dana Brown was hired as the general manager of the Astros, he's like, yeah, I want to lock up everybody. And then you look to see what the Braves have done in the past, where they've signed young pitchers and hitters to like 7-, 8-, 9-year deals, and it was like, okay, the Astros are about to do that. They did it with Javier. Dana Brown was very loose-lipped and very transparent about that they wanted to sign Kyle Tucker. But all of that, like, I think some people feel that Kyle Tucker's like in the final year of his contract. Kyle Tucker has this year and two more. Like, Kyle Tucker is not going anywhere really anytime soon. He still has all of this year. He still has all of next year. And then he has all of 2025. So, like, yes, the contract's going to be a topic of conversation until it's done or it's not done. But he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, but to my point, it's coming in the future. Everybody's hyper-focused on it. He has basically, and his agent, whoever it was, but a combination, have said, look, that money in that contract that Yordan signed, good on him for signing what he needed. We think he's worth more. We think he can get more. And probably they think he can do more, although Yordan has proven so far, and even last year, to be a better-than-average outfielder, at least especially with his throwing arm. But I think from Tucker's perspective, in order to get that and do that, it's twofold, right? You got to continue to do the things that you've been doing at a high level. And then you're in the same lineup, in the same batting order, with a guy that you're basically saying you're better than, who might be one of the best hitters in all of baseball. So, you know, it's what people are watching. It's what the Astros, I'm sure, are watching. It's like an arbitration hearing. You know, if you're saying you're worth more than Yordan Alvarez, well, then let me see what the numbers say. Let me see what, you know, how everything compares between the two of you. And for the, you know, that for the same reason, it's a 3-year window instead of a Correa pay for play for 1 year and prove yourself. This is more of a 3-year window, but you know that all eyes are on him, and he knows it too.
He's definitely worth more than Jordan's contract. Part of that's not because he's, like, you know, far superior than Jordan. It's because Jordan signed an incredibly team-friendly deal.
Oh, a huge bargain.
Like,
yeah.
Jordan AAV is $19 million. Like, Kyle Tucker, I don't think, would sign a contract for less than $30 million AAV. So, it kind of throws a wrench into that conversation because, like, I think Jordan and Kyle Tucker are pretty close to, like, the same tier of baseball player. But because Jordan signed such a team-friendly deal, there's no way Kyle Tucker's even paying attention to the Jordan Alvarez contract. Is it fair to say that Jordan Alvarez is a better hitter, but Kyle Tucker's a better player?
I was going
to
say...
Let's ask that to the Hive, and I'll let you think about it during the break. 713-780-ESPN, because I want you to put a little bit of thought into that. Is Jordan Alvarez the better hitter?
Are you saying
Tucker
I don't
the
normally?
Better player? No, no, I'm saying you do, but I don't want it to be like a rash, quick decision, and I wanted it to open up
okay.
to the Hive.
Right.
And we're up against it. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. Also, something else I'm tired of hearing. A trend that I'm tired of seeing when it comes to the Astros and when Chaz McCormick does something really well. Look, I want Chaz McCormick to be the primary center fielder for the Houston Astros, but anytime Chaz McCormick does something really good, play Chaz! Chaz should be the starter! I'm tired of that trend. I'll tell you why. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from East River 9, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Good idea. There goes Hensley as Chaz McCormick hits one high and deep to left field. Chazmanian Devil gives the Astros a 2-0 lead.
Hey, Bob. Meatloaf.
How do you feel about that nickname, Chazmania Devil? You like that?
I wanted to say I can't.
Say
I used that. Yeah, I want to say I used that like a year ago, but everybody crapped
really?
On me for it, so I'm not going to. I kind of think it's good, but I don't know.
I don't love it. I'll be honest with you. Break the tie, Joe George. Be the arbiter of the Killer Bees. How do you feel about the Chazmanian Devil?
Oh, I think it's fine. I think it's not elite. Right. It's okay. So it's above average.
Okay. We'll go with
all that.
All that
Taz?
Well,
no. No, that's not good. That's not good.
Let's never say that again. Okay. We'll get back
Ouch.
To Chaz in a moment.
Why
713
so harsh?
For the likes and the impressions. 713-780-3776. Is it fair to say that Jordan is the better hitter, but Kyle Tucker is the better player for the Houston Astros? Todd the Show says Tucker is clearly a better fielder, but he doesn't sprint to double play balls as much as I like sometimes. That's very nuanced. Jordan, at best, is an average left fielder. Tucker, at best, is a gold glove right fielder. He's capable of stealing 30 bases. Jordan might sneak five. Is it fair to say Jordan the better hitter, Tucker the better player?
I don't like the term player, because what I was going to say before you put that caveat on the end of it was I think Jordan's a better hitter, and I think Tucker is a better fielder. I think that it's up to the eye of the beholder on evaluating each as the overall player. Because I think with the clutch gene, especially last year in the playoffs, and the way Jordan, the only obstacle that anybody has seen with Jordan is himself. If he breaks down and has injuries, that's a problem. But other than that, I mean, offensively, he hits for average. He hits for power. He hits in the clutch. He does all those things. And not to say that Tucker doesn't do his share to do those things too. I think Jordan does them better. But I also think in the field, to your point, I think Tucker is a faster outfielder. I think he covers more ground. I think that he's more agile in the outfield. But I think that Jordan has a better arm. That's why I think that's what makes Jordan a step above an average outfielder. He's not that speedy, but boy, his arm really makes a difference. But I think that I think Tucker's a better defensive player. I think Jordan's a slightly better offensive player. I don't know that I honestly feel Jordan is a better player. But I think it's a very, very close, and I understand anybody on either side of it.
Yeah, it's good that you have them both, and like it's just a fun conversation having a pop, having a gentle bend. I think Jordan Alvarez is the I'm not going to go as far to say the best hitter in baseball, but he's in the top tier of the best hitters in baseball. Like right there with Aaron Judge. Do you want to throw Jose Ramirez into that conversation? Do you want to throw Mike Trout into that conversation? Like there's a few players that are in that tier, the best hitter in baseball. Yordan Alvarez is a better outfielder than people give him credit for. You're right. He has a cannon for an arm. That's his best defensive skill by a mile.
No question.
He threw a dude out at the plate the other day. The velo on it was 90 miles per hour. He doesn't have great range, though. Doesn't have great instincts, right. And he's not great at like reacting to fly balls, which is why I consider him at best an average left fielder. You're right; he does have a cannon and can throw dudes out at the plate. Kyle Tucker is an elite defensive right fielder, Gold Glove winner, and he can steal bags. And I think Yordan's actually an underrated runner. Like his top end speed is actually pretty good. He's a freak athlete, but he's not the base runner of Kyle Tucker. I think it's really, really close. Yordan's a better hitter because I have Yordan as a tier one hitter. Kyle Tucker's like probably that next tier. I wouldn't consider Kyle Tucker quite tier one with Yordan, with Judge, with a couple of others, but he's right behind him. He's in that second tier. Now, an all-around player, Kyle Tucker might be in that tier one conversation.
But Yordan is, right?
Absolutely, because his offense is so good.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Tucker's defense is better, and Tucker's a better base runner.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? And I think that I don't know if it's the way they go about their business, because Kyle Tucker's just got such an even keel, like his heartbeat never changes, that you just never. It's to his credit, but maybe it's to his detriment, marketing wise and like fan base wise, where people just kind of ho hum it, and they don't get as excited as when Yordan does anything. I mean, ever since he came up. Anything he does in this dude, and everybody stops. It used to be must-see TV to see him take every at-bat. But, you know, he's done so many things in the clutch that everybody is so hyper-focused on Yordan, thinking that big whoa moment is about to come. But when you look at the things Tucker does, he's just the steadier guy that does it, takes care of his business. And you know, they used to say even in interviews, they had to, like, basically use a crowbar to get him to open up and say things and talk. But he's getting it. He's understanding how the game is played around the game. But it doesn't take anything away from his abilities. I just think that everybody gets on that Yordan train on no matter what he does, and to his credit, but also it's almost to the detriment that Tucker is not that kind of guy. He's just kind of – he's happy just laying in the weeds and doing what he does.
Todd says he brings up your point. He says, I think Yordan's clutch gene puts him above Tucker a little. I think it's fair to say because I think Yordan is the most clutch Houston Astro of all time. Quite honestly, I think he's
of
the clutchest.
Wow.
Yeah, I do. Who's more clutch in Astros history than Yordan Alvarez?
I mean, based on what he did last year, it's hard to say anybody else. I would say Springer's
and in
up there.
A World Series winning year.
Yeah, and in a short sample size, we know that in 1 year what Beltran was able to do, but it was just too small of a sample size. I mean, Springer was a guy that when you needed him, you know, he was massive in the World Series. He kind of had that charismatic way of finding the moment. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with Yordan. For what he did, you know, last year alone and just basically saving their bacon and then continuing to just devastate the other team.
Yeah, I mean, Yordan, Beltran's hard to put in that same conversation because they lost in the ALCS or the NLCS at the time.
It was still mighty impressive.
Absolutely. I mean, it was one of the best postseasons in baseball history, but I can't call you the most clutch baseball or the most clutch Houston Astro in a year where you don't make the World Series. George Springer, I think, is probably in that conversation. I think it's fair. But he didn't hit a three-run homer when the Astros were down to their last out in a critical game in the first round and then also hit the go-ahead home run in Game 6 of the World Series that put the Astros in front. I think it's close, but, yeah, I consider Yordan Alvarez the most clutch Houston Astro of all time. And there's been a lot. I mean, Jose Altuve's got a fair share of walk-offs. So does Carlos Correa in the postseason. It's the golden era of Houston. And Astro baseball. 713-780-ESPN. Josh and Beaumont, we went to the game on Friday. Tucker hit a home run and robbed a home run. Any idea how many times a player has done both in the same game? Yeah, 19 players have done that in Major League Baseball, according to Elias. 3713, Yankees won. A big-time Yankees fan here would incredibly love Kyle Tucker to be on the team, but we'll see how it goes. I don't see him getting that you're done deal in Houston. He is the better player and the best player on the Houston Astros, in my opinion. It's coming from a Yankee fan.
That's fine. First of all, I think that a lot of people that are Yankee fans, it's funny how quickly they'll flip because they hate them and don't want anything to do with them. And then if they're available, they got to have them because, you know, they know how good they are. And that's just who Yankee fans are. But it's also, you know, a random weird way that they finally show respect. But I think from a player's perspective, what Juan and others forget is there's a lot of guys, and money talks, obviously. But if it's just like where players want to play, don't think that the players don't remember that and know that and go, there's certain places I don't want to play because of how I've been treated or how I remember, you know, with the rivalry, how it went. And that's in all sports. There are guys that, you know there's a ton of money on the table wherever they go. But if it's between a team that they've had a hated relationship with on the team they've been on, it makes a difference. I've talked to guys throughout the years that said, man, there's no way, I don't care what they offer me, I'm ever playing for that franchise or putting that uniform on. And that's part of the human nature of business. Yeah, you're going to get paid wherever you go, but you also want to be happy. And some guys have long memories when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know where they feel on it. The Chaz McCormick deal. Chaz McCormick had a good game yesterday. Homer doubled. Yeah. He admitted for making that base running blunder in game one of the series that probably could have won the game for the Astros. The Astros viewed it as a blunder as well. But Chaz McCormick yesterday was fantastic. And here's a problem that I have. And look, I want to be very clear on where I stand with the Astros center field position. I agree that Chaz McCormick should be getting a majority of the starts in center field. I'm not a Jake Meyers stan. I'm not going to stand on the table for Jake Meyers. This has nothing to do with Jake Meyers. I just don't love the narrative that I see every time that Chaz McCormick does anything like worthwhile. And it's like, he should be playing every single day in center field. That's my center fielder. We didn't learn anything different yesterday about Chaz McCormick. What has Chaz McCormick always been able to do well as a Major League Baseball player? He crushes left-handed pitching. He is Babe Ruth against lefties for whatever reason. So when Chaz McCormick is in the lineup against lefties, him having a big offensive game is kind of the norm. It's kind of what should be expected. I don't need to see all the tweets and the narrative every time that Chaz gets a base hit against a left-handed pitcher that Chaz McCormick should be the everyday center fielder. I'm getting slightly annoyed by it.
Look, I don't mind it because I think that I understand where you're coming from, but I will just say this. You know how chapped I was the fact that he didn't play opening day, and I thought that was a kick in the nuts. I thought that that was an unfair, not necessary kick in the nuts by Dusty Baker, that this guy did so much for you to be a big reason why you were the world champions and you were celebrating that night on that opening day, and that's what he got. And so I agree with you that, you know, he specializes against left-handed pitching. But you know what? In the World Series, he was playing every game. And he did well enough. And the fact that, to me, it comes down to twofold. I feel bad for the way he was treated early in the season because I didn't feel like he deserved it. And I feel like he's been the consummate, ultimate Astro and team player to do whatever and just be able to kind of put himself above that and just keep doing what he does. And then I've seen Jake Meyers enough to say he just doesn't look like a consistent major league player yet, but we've been saying yet and yet again over and over again, and I would rather see Chaz get a chance to start the majority of the games for at least a sample size to say, okay, prove me wrong. We've seen Jake Meyers. You know you're limited in how many options you have in center field. Let me see a little bit more of a guy that really hasn't let you down since you put him out there and since you made him the starting center fielder in the playoffs. Let me, the same way he steps up when everybody's like, talking about that clutch gene. It's not a clutch, but when his number's called, he's not only a gamer, but he produces results. Let him keep doing that until he doesn't. And if he doesn't, then go back to whatever you're doing or change it up again. I just feel like he's earned his stripes and he's earned the opportunity to have a chance to fail. And I don't think he's been even given that because they're going to stay so consistent with this platoon.
No, I understand what you're saying. But him against lefties is an everyday player. Him against righties is not an everyday player. And a lot of times fan bases don't differentiate between the two. Chaz McCormick is the everyday guy in center field against lefties.
Yeah.
Is he far superior against righties than Jake Meyers where he should be playing every day? I don't know. But what he does against lefties should not influence what he's doing against righties conversation. You shouldn't say that Chaz should start every day because he's hammering lefties. Like, it's not the same thing. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line.
No, I was just going to say, but then explain to me opening day. Because
there was a righty on the mound with a fastball thrower, and Dusty was playing the advantage. He was playing the splits. He was playing what he thought.
Dusty,
it wasn't a lefty on the
Dusty
mound.
Dusty was playing
he didn't
a fastball
against a lefty.
On that one. I just don't like that, though. I don't think that's fair. I think for one game in that moment, I don't think that was fair to him, and I think that was a bad look.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. But what Chaz is doing against lefties shouldn't be – Chaz should play every day against righties. Like, to me, it's two separate conversations. I agree with you about the opening day. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Jordan Tucker, which of the two is the better player? And then the center field dilemma. Is it okay to look at how Chaz McCormick does against lefties and influence Dusty's plans against righties? Also, what's going on at Augusta? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is going down now at Augusta. Victor Hovland's playing really well, 6-under. Currently has a 3-shot lead over Xander Schauffele, John Rahm, Cameron Young, and Brooks Koepka playing well. Who's my guy?
Who's got the Kepper? Joe?
I do.
Yeah, look at Joe. Mr. Know-it-all on golf,
has
showing
who?
It early.
Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka.
Oh, Brooks Koepka. You know who he also has? Will Zalatoris, who withdrew.
Yeah.
And Tiger Woods, who's playing over par.
Yeah.
Looks like Tiger Woods is, I mean, lots
Not
of
great.
Golf to play. But it's going to be hard for him to make the cut. He's 3-over right now through 12. It would be the first time in 23 Masters that Tiger Woods would fail to make the cut. He's one away from tying the all-time record held by Gary Player and held by Fred Couples, Go Cougs. Fred Couples turned in a 71, by the way. Fred Couples is
Fred
tied
Couples.
For 12th on the Masters leaderboard, 1-under. He's done for the day.
It's the same theory that I was talking about when we were talking about Tiger and the one course where I think that he could still win a major because it's not about distance, it's about placement. Fred Couples and Bernard Langer have been proving that for years. Doesn't matter how old they are or how far they don't hit it. Both those guys, every time it seems they play Augusta, they play it well. You know, they may not be in a position anymore to win it, but they're competitive. Langer a couple years ago was in it, and Freddie's been in it. I give them both credit. They love playing there, and they play well there.
Yeah, I don't think that Fred, like you said, is capable of winning it anymore. But to be a dude who's on the Champions Tour that could make the cut in a major is phenomenal. I think he could be on a leaderboard, though, and he's done it in the past. Like
he and Bernard Langer have done it.
I don't know if he's going to be able to. Yeah, they have. I mean, the Masters, of course, so much about local knowledge. Fred Couples tells stories about how much he hated playing at Augusta National early in his career, and then one year just, like, clicked. And then he made the cut in 23 straight Masters, which is tied for Gary Player for the most of all time. I was watching some of the early golf. I've been watching it all day, if I'm being completely honest with you. Tiger's in the featured group, not necessarily playing well. And I started to think of this question because, like, I can't take my eyes off Tiger. I know you're the same way. Can't take your eyes off Tiger. And if we're being completely realistic with where Tiger's game is at today, April 6th, because I tweeted this and people were taking it out of context entirely. If you're being very honest with where Tiger Woods is at right now, today, relative to everybody else, let's just say, in this Masters field, Tiger Woods is probably middle of the pack at best, quite frankly. That's where he's at in his career because of the injuries, because he's an older dude. He's middle of the pack in a Masters field. He's middle of the pack in a Majors field. Yet we can't take our eyes off. We can't stop watching a mediocre golfer at this stage. Yes, probably the greatest of all time, but a mediocre golfer at this stage. And I asked the question on Twitter, at Jeremy Branham, have we ever been so captivated by an athlete that is currently average, over the hill in their particular sport?
Yeah. I gave you a couple on your Twitter. At Jeremy Branham, thumbs up. I said when Derek Jeter was calling it a career and wrapping it up and chasing 3,000, he wasn't what he used to be. He was on the downside on a hard turn. And people couldn't take their eyes off of him. And then he gave you must-see TV and came up clutch once again in the way he got to 3,000 and the way he did everything that he did, even his last game as a Yankee. What was that way? He had a flair for the dramatic. And I think Cal Ripken Jr. was another one because you weren't necessarily watching him for the player he was now, but you were watching him because of what the player was able to do for the entirety of his career by not missing a game. And you could see that he wasn't the same player with the same abilities, but you couldn't stop watching him because you were like, man, marveling at that's a hell of an accomplishment, and everybody was watching it.
Yeah, I think those are two really good ones. I think it's difficult looking at it from a team point of view, or at least there's not as many from a team point of view. Derek Jeter was, and also like you need like a national relevance here. Because, like, I think from, like a local relevance, you could look at, let's say, Biggio chasing after 3,000 hits. That was a reason that you watched the Astros that season, a team that was not a playoff team. But no one nationally, like, was watching the Astros and Craig Biggio on a daily basis. Ripken, no. Probably, especially during, like, the Iron Man streak, whenever he was chasing down the record. I think Derek Jeter's up there. Like, people were tuning in to see what Derek Jeter did whenever he got grooved to fastball. Didn't he hit a home run in his last game?
He did. That's what I was talking about,
Yeah, somebody grooved a fastball for him and did him a solid. I think Kobe Bryant's last game, where didn't he score 60? Was it against, I want to say Utah off the top of my mind, but yeah, he scored like 60 points.
Yeah, 61, 63, yeah.
Was it against Utah?
It might have been.
I don't remember who was against, but he scored 60.
Right.
So like Kobe was that dude. Derek Jeter was that dude. Cal Ripken was that dude. I think it's harder to find them in team sports. I think it's easier to find them in individual sports. Like people said Michael Jordan. I think Michael Jordan, is he on that list? Were people like captivated with Michael Jordan whenever he was with the Wizards?
No, I don't think so.
See, I was hung up on with Jordan.
That was the biggest thing. Was like he would find you a way every now and then to drop a 30 piece or to go off. But overall, you knew he wasn't the same Jordan, but he wasn't chasing anything anymore. He wasn't chasing, you know, the points record or something that was attainable to where everybody was like, got to see Michael tonight, got to see him, he's close. And so it wasn't the same as, like, we just saw LeBron chase the all-time scoring record, and for obvious reasons, people could not take their eyes off of him and how he was going to do it and how it was going to transpire. Michael wasn't chasing any of those things. He was just hanging on. He wanted to keep playing the game, and he was playing in Washington. But it wasn't like, I got to see Michael play tonight. They're playing the Bulls. No, it wasn't like that.
So he said Jordan playing baseball. That's not a bad call. Like, I remember watching SportsCenter back in the day where like they were breaking into Jordan AAA at-bats. Like, that was, it was so weird. It was so weird. Like, the dude's in AAA, which people criticize Michael Jordan for his production as a triple-A baseball player. I look at it as as a great accomplishment. How many dudes could have been away from baseball as long as he was, go into triple-A, which is like a good level of baseball, go watch the Space Cowboys play. There's some good level of play there and some really good players there. And the dude's hitting over 200. Like, I know he didn't have power. I know we mocked that he was like barely above the Mendoza line, but that he went into triple-A straight out of basketball, hadn't touched a baseball bat in who knows how long, and was like somewhat okay at the triple-A level, I thought it was actually a great feat for Michael Jordan, not something that should be mocked.
No, absolutely right, because most guys just aren't built and capable of doing anything close to that, like jumping right in at that level, to your point. Like, you know, they flail around in low A-ball just trying to get a feel for what it truly means to play professional ball, especially when you're taking short buses and traveling, you know, in less than stellar conditions to get to where you're going to go. And yet he was able to do, you know, even look, go back to the Jordan, I mean, the Last Dance. He knew what he was going to do before he even announced that he was going to do it. He had a baseball bat in every hotel room, and he was constantly swinging it, and he was talking it, and he wanted to do it. And, you know, he's just a freakish athlete that he was able to accomplish it. And just to, you know, to get a drink, a small cup of coffee in the bigs, and play AAA and do the things that he did, it was an amazing feat. You're absolutely right on that. But I'm trying to think of, like, they were breaking in for his at-bats every now and then. But I'm trying to think about, like Judge last year. They broke in for every at-bat down the stretch.
Yeah.
But
see, Judge is not mediocre,
than that,
though.
When? Yeah, exactly.
Judge is
not
good.
Mediocre. I'm trying to think of the last time we had anything else where you'd break. Maybe I'm missing a sport, right? Because baseball is the easiest one with the guys that I mentioned, but maybe I'm missing something somewhere else down the line.
What about Emmitt Smith when he was going to break the rushing record? I mean, he was on the Cardinals, and he wasn't
record
good.
Record chasing is interesting. Like, it's a caveat that I hadn't thought about, because you're right.
It's a good point.
Because people that are record chasing, at least in terms of career stats, they're usually not nearly as good. Like, probably a little bit different for Breeze, probably a little bit different for Brady. Like, they were still really good. They were still really good compared to the rest of their league. But Emmitt Smith, relative to every other running back in the NFL,
wasn't.
Like, he was mediocre at best, probably even bad at that point. I think Emmitt Smith's a good call,
but
it because of Emmitt Smith, or is it the appeal of the record?
No, that's where I was going with the Ripken thing. I mean, and even with the Jeter thing, when we're talking about 3,000 hits, we're looking at either milestones or records that make you pay more attention, that you otherwise wouldn't if it was just their final season and Jeter, it wasn't his last game and he was going to break the record. But because the record's involved and it's a big name, people pay more attention. And I think 300 wins has that same effect too, because you see pitchers that are on the downside but have been able to maintain longevity enough that they're chasing that milestone and it means something.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What former all-time great or what athlete who's no longer very good, and quite frankly, just average for where they are currently? Tiger Woods currently today is very much an average golfer, but we can't take our eyes off. We're watching every shot of Tiger Woods. We're watching the Masters leaderboard. We're looking where Tiger Woods is at, not even looking at who's in the top five, who's in the top 10, who's leading the gosh darn thing. What other athletes have you been so captivated by them whenever they're now mediocre? Kobe Bryant, Tiger Woods, Emmitt Smith, Cal Ripken, Derek Jeter. What are some of those other athletes that you couldn't take your eyes off even when they were fading away, even when they weren't very good anymore? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.